With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. I am delighted to be joined once again by Jack Howard.
Hello.
Hello, Jack. Jack, we have an announcement to make.
Yes, we do, although I'm sure everyone can see it coming because you've already done the big announcement, and so this is like a secondary announcement to the announcement.
Kermode on Film is shutting up shop.
It is.
Coming to an end. All good things must come to an end, and this is happening, although I'm sure we will find some way of you and I continuing to blather on about movies in some format.
Even if it's just us in the pub and I just film it on my iPhone and we just upload it.
Actually, that might work.
Then we don't need to sell it to anyone.
But the very last comment on film is going to be just me and Jack talking.
Whatever. Yeah, we'll talk about whatever we want to talk about that day.
It'll be 3 hours long, and it will just blather on. I'm going to slightly turn you down in my headphones, because as much as I love this, the soothing sound
like
of your voice, you're suddenly going
like
all very, very loud.
Okay.
No, it's good, it's good.
Well, so, speaking of 3 hours.
Speaking of, and
this is the sort of stuff you're going to miss out on when I'm gone.
You can't bottle this magic, can you? Speaking of 3 hours, the subject that we're talking about, and we promised this before after we'd done our Spider-Man podcast, this is the Batman podcast.
Police!
When that light hits the sky, it's not just a call. It's a warning.
How are we pronouncing it? The Batman?
No, I think you say
it. Yeah, so this is The Batman. I'm just going to turn this off.
Batman. Le Batman.
What have they called it in other countries? Has it been called?
I have no idea. I hope it is called Le Batman.
Yeah. Il Batman.
Oh.
Okay. So, you and I both saw this, you know, just before it opened. Mm-hmm. I've now seen it twice.
I've seen it twice as well.
I'm going to start with you, Jack.
Okay.
How was The Batman for
Should
you?
Should we do a summary first?
Yeah,
I suppose. So, since Christopher Nolan finished his Batman series in 2012...
Yeah.
The Dark Knight Rises, Batman has been seen in Lego form. He has been seen in Zack Snyder form
for
the last, three times. He was in Suicide Squad,
not Suicide Squad.
But he appeared in Suicide Squad. He's about to appear again in a delayed release now of The Flash, which is now coming out next year.
Yes, and is that, that's with Ben Affleck.
That's Ben Affleck's.
And he's already filmed that, right?
Apparently,
okay,
yeah.
Fine.
So Batman has not gone away. And here we are again, this time with Matt Reeves directing Robert Pattinson.
Very good.
I'm not the first person to do that.
No, not as good as R-Bats.
R-Bats is great. There's a great podcast called Mr. Sunday Movies where they call him Robert Battenbat. I don't even know where
Very
that joke
good.
Started. But yes, now we
you
have
saw,
this.
You saw the thing on Twitter with the cinema marquee, which said, worst vampire ever. Took 14 years to become a bat. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. All the jokes are fabulous. I bet when he took the role, he was like, right.
Here we go.
I know what I'm getting myself into. But yeah, now Matt Reeves is directing Robert Pattinson as Batman in this new, I believe, the start of a trilogy, where it is the second year of Batman. We're missing out the origin story and starting in year two of him being Batman as we find him in the shadows, beating up criminals in the night.
And beating up himself in the
darkness. Yes, and being emo and referring to himself, not as Batman, but as Vengeance.
Yes. I'm Vengeance.
Call me Vengeance, Alfred. You're not my real dad.
And you're not called Vengeance.
My sort of broad opinion on this is that it's undeniably fantastic. It's so brilliantly made. Clearly so much care has gone into it. The filmmaking, like the direction by Matt Reeves, the cinematography by Greg Frazier and his lighting and framing, the performance by Robert Pattinson as Batman, I think is out of this world good. I think this is the first time I've seen Batman and remembered when he's Batman that he's still a man in there. Like, I think a lot of the time when, like, Christian Bale's in the cowl, you kind of lose the person underneath it, and you don't see the eyes or the shape of his face. You just, you know what I mean? You could completely lose the guy. In this, there's so much attention on his small little performances. Like, his emotion comes through by the small little twitches he does with his eye. There's a lot of, like, focus on that. Even the shape of the cowl seems to kind of shape Pattinson's face.
Yes, it's got a kind of curl up like
that.
It's
got a really
wide
mouth. But, like, even just, like, the way that it's shaped on his head, you can just see more of his face. It just seems like more of a person.
I wondered, when I first saw the shape of that cowl, whether that was a kind of an in nod to, because the cowl has got a curl in it that almost mirrors the curl of the Joker's mouth, and I wondered whether they were doing that in a kind of because the whole thing is he's that and he's also that.
And
of course we do at one point actually get a speech which is a virtual reprise of the Heath Ledger. No, don't do that. You're better than that. You know, you and I are the same.
Yes.
That speech pretty much reoccurs.
This is basically what I was getting to.
Sorry.
No. You've perfectly hit on what my sort of like caveat to all of this is I'm watching it and going, it's so undeniably good. Like, technically incredible. Like, performances, fantastic. Probably the best performances Batman that I've seen. It's so great to see him go back to the roots of properly being the world's greatest detective. Seeing him set in kind of a Fincher-esque, you know, Zodiac 7 kind of world. But I am also watching it and being like, it's Batman again. It is Batman. And it's me. Like, we know how much I've gone on about The Dark Knight. A lot. But in
The Dark Knight?
I don't know if I've mentioned
this. You've never brought it up before.
It's like the origins of this podcast, actually. It's quite nice. Kind of bookending with Batman, the beginning of it in 2018 and now has been shaped by Batman.
But there are moments, still a better film. Moving on.
There are moments in this that felt almost like it was intentionally tipping the hat to The Dark Knight.
Okay.
By the way that the Riddler's... I think your phone just vibrated.
No, that was my stomach.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I've literally got an alien living in my stomach.
Are we leaving all this in?
Yeah. Hey, look, there's only three more podcasts to go, you know.
Let it all hang out. But the Riddler's messages on the news, the speeches that you mentioned, the We're Not So Different, you and I, kind of, even just the fact that it took place after the Riddler intentionally got caught, there's so many like moments that felt like it was going like, that's kind of The Dark Knight. But I suppose the Batman's in it. So, like, how many how many versions of it can you do before they kind of do end up crossing over, even unintentionally? So it's kind of complicated because I think what I'm saying is that the film itself is fab, but there's a wider conversation to be had, and I don't want this to just sort of turn into superhero fatigue. But it is like, yeah, it's Batman again. Do you know what I mean?
Who's the mustache with the broken nose? One of the guys I got into it with at the Iceberg Lounge. What are you saying, Kinsey? Moonlights for the Penguin? All right, Moonlights is a cop.
Okay, so when I first saw it, I saw it in just the ordinary Warner's studio, and I was at the beginning. I was thinking 3 hours. Okay, that's a big ask.
Mm.
And I was actually pleasantly surprised by the fact that it didn't feel 3 hours. It felt like a long film. It didn't feel like a three-hour film. I mean, I've seen films that are a lot shorter that were actually... I mean, weirdly enough, when I saw the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League, I thought it was... Justice League? I didn't mean
yes,
Justice League.
Yes, it is, yes.
It was way better than the original cut, but it still felt like walking through trees. We, you know, obviously you and I talked about this. So I thought, firstly, oh, well, that went by faster than I expected. For a number of reasons. Firstly, because I thought that R. Batts was actually terrific. I thought the kind of emo goth Edward Scissorhands, you know, if Edward Cullen was a shiny vampire, this is a... Because it is the first time he's played a vampire really since Twilight. And it was...
No, but even by, like, putting on sunglasses because it's too bright outside.
Yeah,
no, I love those little details.
But it's, like you say, that must have been the thing in his mind was... Because the thing with Robert Pattinson is he went so... far to kind of, you know, to deliberately say, look, you know, I did that. And then he was working with Cronenberg and all these kind of really interesting directors. And
yeah,
just
the Safdie brothers and so many different people.
And being really great. In the,
even know, Matt Reeves had said, like, he wasn't sure if he would want to return to blockbuster movies. And I think Robert Pattinson's gone on record being like, his agent told him he wasn't on the lists for things because people didn't know he wanted to do stuff like that. Which is why he ended up doing Tenet.
Well, I think that there's a kind of really... nice thing going on, which is that it feels to, because as somebody who loves the Twilight films, it felt like there was a sort of embracing of the Twilight thing for me, because I think that his Bruce Wayne is kind of the flip side of Edward Cullen, as I said, from shiny vampire to dark vampire. So I liked all that. I thought he did a good job of being hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, not physically hurt as well, but also emotionally. With Christian Bale, there was an awful lot of, you know, and all that stuff. But you did get the sense with Robert Pattinson that he was hurt. So I liked that.
He felt volatile.
Yes.
In each scene, I wasn't sure how he was going to react. And there are the now famous first moment that, what the hell are you supposed to be? And then beating up the criminal and saying, I'm vengeance.
Yeah.
That first brutal beating when he like does the extra few punches when the guy's on the floor,
there's
like an enjoyment that happens because you're like, Batman's kicking the heck out of people, but also it's like, I'm kind of frightened of you.
And then that's of course revisited later on in the movie, in which it is, you know, that's Nick, our producer, if we're leaving in my stomach, that's Nick, our producer, whose computer wasn't on silent, was it, Nick?
No,
it wasn't.
For shame.
So anyway, so I liked that. I thought that the look of the film was really interesting. But here's what's fascinating. The first time I saw it, I thought, okay, what they've done is they've deliberately gone the other way from Nolan. Whereas Nolan had that kind of the IMAX clear, crisp spectacle. This is grimy and scuzzy. And an awful lot of the film, and I've used this phrase before, it looks like you're squinting through rain in a rearview mirror. You can't quite... It's like everything's really kind of...
It's like intentionally a little bit mucky and dirty and imperfect in a really kind of... I don't know.
In a really perfect way. But which is fascinating, because when you said, like, Fincher and you mentioned Seven...
Yeah.
Because, of course, the whole thing about Seven, which is that there's all dark at the edge of the frame. So the idea in its most perfect form was that the edge of the frame of Seven would bleed into the blackness of the theatre.
Right.
And that was why they had those silver retained prints, the ones in which black is properly black. I mean, now everything's digital, but back in the age of celluloid, it was quite hard.
All the way back in 1995.
I know. Well, all the way back in a previous century, Jack.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Did you ever see Queen perform live? No, you didn't. But
we're just doing all the greatest hits of this podcast.
I'm sorry. But so I thought that when I first saw it, I thought, okay, that's it's an interesting aesthetic choice. The problem with it is it's making some things, like, for example, the car chase. I thought, okay, geographically, I can't get a handle on this car chase. Then I saw it in IMAX, and the big surprise for me was, and I saw it in the BFI IMAX, or
the bigger one,
the biggest one in the UK. And I was really surprised by how good it looked on the really big fuck off screen.
Mm.
And that made me think, okay, I misjudged this slightly. That the what looked like a kind of scuzziness on a smaller screen, when projected on a huge IMAX screen, didn't look out of place. Actually made me think, oh, it has its own grandeur. It has.
Do you know
what?
This is so interesting. I had the exact opposite.
Oh, okay.
Like, exact opposite.
So tell me what your experience was.
I saw a preview screening in the IMAX in Leicester Square.
Right.
And I was in the perfect seat for it. It was a fantastic experience. but I almost felt like the intensity, the close-ups, the sort of, because it's quite a the way it's shot is almost quite still and rigid a lot of the time. Like there's not a lot of like camera movement, or like there's you know, a lot of the time, like even when Batman's flying through the city, it's like fixed to his head,
right?
And all those intensity, the intense close-ups and things like that, almost in IMAX after a while became almost a little bit exhausting.
Oh, okay.
So I then saw it about a week or so later in Picture House, which was being shown in Dolby Atmos. Yeah. And I really preferred that experience because it was like I was a little bit further away from the screen, but the sound was still super immersive.
Okay, but here's what's interesting. That although we did it the other way round...
It's the second time.
Mm. And I think partly in that case, it may not be the format. Partly it may be that, this sounds like a big ask for a film that's 3 hours in the first place. Maybe you actually have to see it twice to get a handle on it. Because
the first
time around, maybe it does feel too much in your face. Certainly, particularly with the car chase, the big chase sequence. The first time around, it was like, okay, I just pull back and give me a master shot, all right? Literally, give me an
show me where they are.
Show me where they are in relation to each other. Second time round, I didn't feel that. And I thought, oh, this is because I'm seeing it on IMAX. But if you had the experience the other way around, what I felt was the same as what you just described, which is I felt like I was able to step back and the film didn't feel quite so oppressively in your face.
Because it actually has a very like steady pace to it, the whole thing, the whole way through. It doesn't feel like it's like... moving at breakneck pace.
The whole film
I think is quite steadily sort of taken. It's not rushing. Like it has even full extended sequences where Batman is just walking around a crime scene and it's not trying to like get through it. It's not worried that you're going to be bored. And that's what a lot of the time I find that blockbuster movies, I mean, the first one that comes to mind is the most recent, you know, Ryan Reynolds venture, The Adam Project, which I enjoyed, like starts with just like, we're in the middle of a space chase scene.
Stuff, boom, bang, ba-ding.
Whereas this starts with just POV of the Riddler watching people through a window in a sort of Hitchcockian kind of way that just sort of like, I don't know, just opens and starts. And there was something about the rhythm of it that I really appreciated. And actually after 3 hours of that, I think I just started feeling a little bit sort of overwhelmed by just the amount of information almost, like in the not that it was moving slowly or anything like that, but just more like it's just a lot to take in all at once.
I was talking to somebody who has very similar film tastes to me, and so this may not make sense, but it may. And I said, you know, what did you think? They said, well, I really, really loved the moment when, after all that stuff, they finally find the Riddler and it's Brian Wilson. I do think it was the first time he turns around. It was like, but so I think that the character is well done. I think that the cinematography,
Bruce Wayne Batman.
Bruce Wayne Batman. Yeah, and also a nice balance. I mean, for every person I've heard say, well, there's too much Bruce Wayne and not enough Batman, I've heard somebody else go, well, there's too much Batman and not enough. You know, it's
really?
Just...
I really liked, there's been some conversation happening about how there's not a clear separation between Batman and Bruce Wayne in this one.
No, but there's not meant to be.
And there's not meant to be.
That's the whole point. Like you said,
they're slowing it down.
Because when Christian Bale puts the Batman thing on, also because of the voice thing, you know, it is like he has become a completely different person.
Yeah, and he's playing the playboy.
So,
and in this, he hasn't figured out that's useful yet.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about that.
It does, however, slightly raise the problem of, because he's so much the same in both versions, why he doesn't walk up to people and they go, all right, Bruce, because I know you're wearing a mask, but you are clearly Bruce Wayne, so sorry. But the other thing is, I was struck by the fact that with the characters that you would traditionally think of as Catwoman, Riddler, are played in a way which is much closer to, and Penguin are played in a way which is much closer to a human version than an animalistic version. So, for example, Penguin, who's played brilliantly by Colin Farrell,
so good
in a performance which is okay. Jared Leto, that is how you use.
I'm shaking my head.
Exactly.
Morbius is coming out at some point.
Oh, God. I saw the trailer for it.
I keep seeing the trailer for it.
I wanted to punch myself in the face.
I'm not seeing it. And the latest, just as a side note, the latest controversy for Morbius is that apparently all the stuff that's in the trailer that's like a tip of the hat to Spider-Man and to a wider universe and to like Michael Keaton being in it,
right.
apparently all of it's been cut out.
Okay.
So it's all just in the trailer to get people in the seats, yeah. and then it's not in
Here's
the film.
Here's the thing, I already don't care.
I couldn't give a shit, Mark.
But, okay.
I hope it fails spectacularly.
The idea that you what you're getting is like a version of the Penguin, who is somebody who is referred to as Penguin and doesn't like the name, but has got the physical characteristics of a penguin.
Did you like the little moment when he's been tied up and he waddles?
And he goes, yes, after they drive off. Yeah, exactly. But it's done like, and then, you know, Selena isn't, she's not Catwoman, but yep. she's a woman, you know, but she is
a cat burglar, and yeah.
Which seemed to me to be kind of in the same universe as Joker. As the, you know, the Joaquin Phoenix Joker, that mm-hmm. you're playing the, yes, they're cartoon characters, but you're playing them closer to something which is recognisably human. And, you know, Riddler isn't Jim Carrey.
No.
It's not, you know.
He's not in spandex.
Yeah,
he's,
exactly. Yeah. He's just somebody.
He's the Zodiac Killer.
He's the Zodiac Killer, and he's an incel, and he's, you know.
That was great. I really, and it was funny. Like, the reveal of him on his stream, full spoilers, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, when do we not? The moment when you see him on his actual stream being like, hey guys, yeah. thanks for the follows. It's like
90 likes.
It's like darkly funny. And also when the moment when the police say he's got over 500 followers, there's like part of you that wants to go,
no, yes.
But then you realize it's kind of all it takes. Yes,
exactly.
And that's what's darkly kind of scary about it. And the attack at the end on essentially Madison Square Garden, but yeah. for Gotham, felt so much like the January attacks on the Capitol. Like, it felt so weirdly similar, and it was like, God, this must have, I don't know if it was inspired by it, can't have been, because it was happening while it was already in production, but it felt like weirdly like mirroring in the way that Heath Ledger's Joker and The Dark Knight felt post 9/11. Here's what happens to a city when a terrorist comes in, and
right.
you know, this felt like similarly reflective of these current times. And it seems interesting that Batman movies keep being the ones that reflect the sort of weird times that we're in.
I mean, I was just kind of impressed by how much what they'd managed to do was to take this sounds like a stupid thing to say, but cartoon caricatures, mm-hmm. you know, characters who have literally become, you know, completely metamorphosized to the point that they're barely human, and pulled them right back the other way to give you, I mean, when she's wearing the mask, and it's not the Catwoman mask, it's just a thing,
the
which
little,
is, yeah,
little
just,
he is.
But just a tiny little, yeah. I liked that stuff, actually. I thought that worked well. I did think Colin Farrell's performance was fantastic.
He is so good.
The first time round, I watched the whole movie not knowing it was Colin Farrell.
My friend who came to see it with me the second time, and the credits came up and said Colin Farrell, he was like, Colin Farrell?
Yeah, when?
And I was like, he's the Penguin. And he went, fuck off.
I
love seeing that people go like, what? Yeah. And I can clearly see as well from the interviews that Colin Farrell's doing that he's having a blast.
I got you! Take that, you friggin' psycho! I got you!
Having the blast thing is important because it's not like Jared Leto, who is the worst actor in the world.
Do you know, there's another Apple TV show that's coming out at the moment with him and Anne Hathaway in it, and I keep seeing the trailer for that as well. And you know what he's wearing? More makeup on his face so that he doesn't look like Jared Leto.
But he still looks like Jared Leto.
Just doing Jared Leto.
But he still looks like Jared Leto, yeah. Whereas Colin Farrell
looks... Can we put a veto on Leto? Can we stop?
Did you just come up with that right now? Very good.
Can we just stop it?
That's very
good. Can we refuse to mention him from now on?
Okay. Well, you've got to refuse to mention
it. Just gets me riled up.
It will come back again. So I thought all that stuff was well done. I think there is, however, and I agree with you on this, there is the here we are again. You know, we've done the Nolans. They felt like a complete self-contained world. And here we are again. So that is an issue. Although I wrote a piece for a magazine about the kind of history of Batman on screen. It was only a short piece, but it was like a couple of thousand words or something. And I was, you know, going back to the, you know, the serials, which were the first, you know, cinematic incarnation. Then, of course, the famous TV version, which actually spawned the first Batman movie, because the Batman movie with Adam West is the first full-length Batman movie.
With the shark.
Yeah. it's a, you know,
I've seen an incredible video that someone's done where they've spliced in footage from that movie, but they've narrated it like Robert Pattinson.
Oh, really?
Dear diary, today I lifted a bomb, a perfectly spherical bomb, above my head.
Well, going through that and seeing, you know, okay, so Adam West, Michael Keaton, Val Kilmer, you know, all the different versions, and go, okay, well, yes, it is constantly reinventing. This is the first time I think I've actually felt, I thought we were done with this, because the Nolans felt like a, you know, a blocky monolith thing that how do you go back to?
Yeah.
So taking that into account, I think they did a pretty good job of going, okay, well,
that's it.
Fine, but we're going to do this instead. There were a couple of things that didn't quite ring true. There's a couple of plot points that felt like they were...
I agree with this as well. It gets kind of clumsy in the third act, where everyone starts just monologuing to each other about reveals.
There's a lot of explanation going on.
And it sort of
on.
Flips back and forth.
Yeah.
Selena's father is this guy, and then he tells him that this guy killed your parents, and then Alfred tells him, no, actually, this person killed your parents. And it's just all of it is just people talking about different things, and it becomes a bit repetitive.
It becomes a bit mechanical at that point. Mm-hmm. Although, hats off to Andy Serkis, who is not in the film anything like as much as I would like him to be. Mm-hmm. But during the scene in the hospital in which he does the "Your father was a good man," which is a scene which is written to fall over.
Yes.
I mean, it's, you know, literally, you look at that and go, okay, you might be able to get away with this, but the likelihood is that you won't. And actually, I thought he did that really well.
I completely agree.
Because he's Andy Serkis.
This is kind of going back to the sort of point I made at the start, which is that you can't deny that everybody in this movie brought their A game, from cast to crew. I'm sure the catering was brilliant. Like, it is all so good. It's like top tier, like blockbuster filmmaking. Like in complete contrast, and people are doing this in a black and white way on the internet, where like one means good, one means bad, but it feels like the sort of thing that should exist in opposition to Marvel. It's like why Joker worked for a large audience, because it felt like the yin and the yang. It felt like we have squeaky clean, very clearly digital, very like bright Marvel, and then we have like dingy, darker characters over here. And when DC tried to do the Joss Whedon version of Justice League and tried to like re-edit Suicide Squad to match more like Marvel stuff, it all fails. And I think that's why this kind of works, because they're kind of taking more of a different stance on something, and it's great to see it. But at the same time, there is a part of me that goes, yeah, I think I've seen these things in a different way, and we're kind of doing it, but also like it's great. It's a very, very difficult thing to sort of like to get my mind around, because I do like it a lot.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There is a scene in this that the first time I watched it, it kind of soured the ending for me. And first of all, I think the
ending... Why? Because it's a setup for...
Well, yeah. Like, it felt like such a strong, we are making a standalone one movie kind of thing. And then they kind of just slipped in...
So it's Barry Keoghan, basically.
Yeah, and playing the Joker.
Well, playing unnamed
prisoner,
exactly,
number one.
Who laughs a lot.
Yes, yes. Who Matt Reeves in interviews now is just being like, yeah, it's the Joker. Like, he's calling him Joker.
Because it was funny, because after that, you know, and then I sat and I sat through the credits, and firstly it was, oh, Colin Farrell, bugger, you know, yes. And then, oh, Barry Keoghan, because obviously, you know, they've worked together anyway. And I love Barry Keoghan. I think he's absolutely fantastic. And he's absolutely wonderful in Green Knight. But he was, oh yes, he's credited as unnamed or even unseen, because you only see him in silhouette, Arkham Inmate.
Yeah.
Joker.
It's the Joker. and that's kind of another, it's like, okay, again? Like, it's since Heath's Joker, like, there is, I can't believe we've had Leto, and we've had a Gotham show one. That,
okay,
yeah.
So first of all, Jared Leto's Joker.
Vito and Leto.
Just the shittest Joker of all Jokers ever, right?
Can you put the word damaged on my head so that people know that I'm all, like, crazy and stuff?
Yeah, you know, I sent dead rats to the camp, but it wasn't me.
Yeah.
It was Joker.
Yeah.
It was Joker.
And he's clearly just doing an impression of Heath Ledger's voice and everything.
It was somebody quite sensible said, all these method acting assholes, said, you know, they get themselves into character, but they never get themselves into the character of a really nice, decent person who's really fun to be around. You know, no, it's always the absolute shithead. You know, yeah, but I was deep in character. No, you're just a shithead.
You're enjoying being a twat.
So, yeah.
And then Joaquin Phoenix, and now another one.
Yes.
And I feel like that woman on the news, like, oh, not another one. Like, it's a bit like, I can't get excited about the Joker again.
But Barry Keoghan.
But Barry Keoghan's great.
He is
great, and I do want to see more of. I think what I feel about this is that I almost wish that they just went, do you like that? Do you like that one movie we made? Because there might be more, but they just couldn't help it. Like, the boardroom people couldn't help themselves but go, like, stick a little thing in there. And I think the movie clearly ends when Batman's doing his voiceover again, and the great moment when the person who's about to be helicopter lifted out of the scene.
Yeah.
Is holding on to him.
Yes.
And he's like, I mean, it comes after the amazing moment when the criminal calls themselves Vengeance, and, like, that wakes him up to make him realize that he's been inspiring the wrong people. And that feels like the ending of the film, when the camera, like, cranes up above Batman in the light, and then it carries on for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And that, after that scene with unnamed prisoner number one, I was a bit like, damn it. Like, I just can't help but, like, have that kind of, like, knotted feeling where I'm just like, oh, it just feels a bit gross. I don't know. How do you feel about those sorts of things?
I think, well, as far as the ending is concerned, I think the overhead shot of him walking with the flare through the water with, you know, like Moses and the Red Sea. I think that shot is rather like in Godzilla, when it's that, you know, the halo drop.
Yeah,
you go, okay, whatever else may be wrong with this film, that is, it just looks fantastic. And the second time round, because I knew it was coming on the big IMAX screen, I was just really looking forward to it. Yeah, look at that. It's a really, really good shot. And then you're right, the film finishes, and then it's, oh, over here, now something else is happening.
Now he's saying goodbye to Catwoman, and then they ride on their
Although, actually, even, I thought, I kind of forgave that, because... Yeah. Having said my thing about, you know, the whole film is like squinting at something in a rear view mirror, the fact that the last view is in a rear view mirror, which kind of like, okay, fine, that has a cycle to it. The then going back to the don't worry,
it was just a bit, there's like, gonna be more.
Yeah, so you like this one, the next one will be even longer. but yeah, I mean, I just think there was so much more right with it than I had expected.
Completely.
That I was willing to forgive those things. And yet I did still come out thinking, but it does by its nature feel like a footnote to the Nolans, because you can't get away from that. But hey, if that's the hand that you're dealt, you know, I mean, the thing is, the Nolan movies aren't going to stop any other Batmans in future. And in a way, maybe we needed
we need to sort of normalize the idea that,
there'll be other Batmans. There'll be other James Bonds, all this stuff is good. So, you know, James Bond will return, so will Batman. And I'd much rather have this than bloody Ben Affleck.
And there's a...
I like Ben Affleck generally, but he wasn't any good as Batman.
It was almost a little bit like how Andrew Garfield was dealt a bad hand with the Amazing Spider-Man films, that he's better than the movies, and that's been proven now. I think Ben Affleck is a better Batman than the movies he's in. and
which isn't saying much.
Sure, but
although he does say, or I read an interview with him in which he said in The Flash it was the first time he actually felt that he'd done Batman the way he wanted to do Batman.
I think what's happening with this version of our bats is that it feels like Batman is the most interesting character on the screen, and that tends not to be the case. And I like Christian Bale, and I think that as much as people want to make fun of his Batman voice, where is he? Where's the trigger? Like, it's iconic, and you wouldn't get to where we're at now
if it
wasn't that.
Yeah.
Because what Pattinson's doing is like a toned down version of that kind of, yeah, it's a Batman voice.
Well, okay, there's a weird comparison here, which is, you know, they've reissued the Godfather movies just recently because of the anniversary.
Yeah.
And I was doing the radio show, and I said, oh, you know, it's the thing, blah, 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 blah. In case you haven't seen it, here's the setup. And of course, and the whole thing is about, you know, Michael wants to get out, and Marlon, and here's a clip. And then the clip went, you know, and immediately it sounds like somebody doing a joke impression of Marlon Brando, because the Brando, you know, performance in Godfather is so iconic that it is a cliche.
Yeah.
And that is actually, it's a problem, because it wasn't a cliche. The cliche has happened as a result of it.
Yep.
And so with the I'm Batman, the first time that was happening, I know we all went, sorry, is there something in the larynx thing? But you know, the fact that he stuck with it became that iconic performance. It's only now that everything is post-Batman like that it becomes funny, because it's...
There's something about when Christian Bale says a sentence longer than three words that makes it funny in The Dark Knight. He's like,
this city just showed you that it's full of people ready to believe in good.
It's like, it's very silly. But when Robert Pattinson's going... Who's the mustache with the broken nose? Yeah, it just feels more intense. Do you know what? Actually, they've kind of made Batman sexy in a way that, like, the Fishman in Del Toro's movie, what's it called?
Oh, yeah. In Shape of Water.
In Shape of Water is a bit sexy. They've kind of found a way. And because
so I thought you were referring to Aquaman, and I'm thinking, are you going to go off on a man crush thing about Aquaman, about Jason Momoa?
We could do. But what I mean is that, like, there's something about him and Catwoman in this, and the whole press tour on it has been like sex led in a way that like the way that they are photographed with each other has been constantly about like how beautiful and sexy they look together in a very Batman Catwoman way, but just them as individuals, which is also in itself kind of unusual to see, because so much of superhero and blockbuster filmmaking at the moment is very asexual in a way that I get, because this course correcting for years of like women being completely objectified. So I get that, like, not having a female character be the love interest or the one that the guy wants to get with.
Yeah.
But like in this, there is a lot of like sexual tension in a way that I thought was very different to a lot of stuff that's being made now.
Yeah. I mean, I think Zoe Kravitz is absolutely brilliant. I was wondering
so
whether...
Good.
Did Kimmy get released just before because
just
of
before.
That? Okay, you know,
I don't know if it's because of it, but I loved that movie.
I thought Kimmy was fantastic.
I'm just such a fan of Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah, it's such a shame he stopped making movies. What happened to that? You know, I'm not going to make... Oh, fuck it.
Yeah.
And also, you watch Kimmy, and Kimmy looks like the work of a sort of agile young director, because it's got all these kind of great stuff, but I really enjoyed that film. It was really well done.
Follow Steven Soderbergh to the ends of the earth. I think he's a genius.
Yeah.
And I love that now it's going to become a podcast about Soderbergh, but now that he's just a filmmaking one man and machine, that he'll shoot, direct, edit all of his movies under different pseudonyms, and he'll be cutting the movie as he's making it, and he can't now think of another way of making a movie. Like the way that he's editing it will inform how he shoots or reshoots something, and he's just the best at this.
Am I remembering this right? Did I get you to watch the Soderbergh Solaris?
You did, and I adored it.
Absolutely, it's really good.
It's
isn't
really,
it?
Really good.
And I think it's weird now, because I read stuff about that now, and everyone there saying, oh, it's really great. You go, yeah, but people didn't think that originally. But
I think it's fabulous.
Yeah, it's hard.
I did a whole video on YouTube, actually, called Sci-Fi and Depression, which was me and a friend of mine. We wrote a script together, basically analysing it and also bringing our own personal sort of projections onto it and just deconstructing it. And I thought it was just so meaningful. And when you recommended it, it was at a time when I really needed to watch something like that as well.
Did I tell you that in that depressing way, when they were making it, and I think it's actually not in the film, when they were making it, there was a a naked back shot of George Clooney that somehow managed to get itself into the public domain. You know, this is the new version, and people started calling it Solarsis,
which is not a good pun.
It's just, it's like,
it's, I think it's, there's a shot of them naked on the bed.
Oh, is that what it is?
And,
right, fine.
And you can see George Clooney's lovely bottom.
And you go, Solarsis.
It's not. It's not even that clever.
Yeah, no. It's like Batman or
yeah. Or Arbats.
Arbats is good. Or, you know, Vito Leto.
Thank you. Just taking us back to Batman before we... There's a couple of things I want to...
Just stop for one moment to go, I fucking hate Jared Leto. Anyway, moving on.
A couple of things I wanted to mention before we bring the podcast on Batman to a close. First of all, Michael Giacchino.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I can't stop listening to this theme. And obviously at first, everyone, when they heard it in the first trailer that was released, which is something I really enjoyed as well, that the marketing for the movie got us all used to the Batman theme. It was like constantly used in all the trailers. And that bum, 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 bum. Clearly, everyone has made this comparison. Sounds like it's about to go bum, ba-dum, bum, ba-dum. It's very obviously funeral march, like very Imperial March kind of stuff. But it just feels like Batman now. And it feels almost like a superhero version of something like the Halloween theme. Like that moment, the upside down shot.
That's interesting, okay.
The upside down shot when he's walking towards the Penguin. Like, if you are, as you are, with the Penguin, that's a scary-looking dude coming towards you. That is terrifying.
Yeah.
And I think the music does that same thing, and it really, like, I don't know, it just the operatic nature of it as well. Like, it just really works for me.
Yeah, no, there is a Darth Batman thing going on there, isn't there?
Yeah.
So, is there anything that you really didn't like?
To be honest, no.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
I think it literally is just a wider sense of it's a Batman again. But I like that essentially what's happening is that we're getting a more detailed, more interesting look at who Batman is. And I like how much Batman is in it. It's like 90% Batman and 10% Bruce Wayne.
Is it?
I don't think Bruce Wayne's in it that much. Every scene seems to be Batman.
I don't know about this. I mean,
When he's got the cowl off, it seems to be a minimal part of the movie.
Okay, well, I've seen it twice now, but I thought there's a very good balance between how much that you know.
It's not a criticism. I enjoyed the balance of it. I liked seeing a Batman movie where Batman was in it a lot and he was doing all the crime solving, and I like that the answers to the riddles were silly. Like Thumb Drive.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked that it was
The Thumb Drive joke is funny, actually, isn't it?
It's and even just like the nature of like Batman going, URL. And then like us going, oh my God. Like even that like feels like it would be like a crap game that you'd play with somebody. Like you're trying to be too clever, take it more literally. I liked all of that stuff. Genuinely, like the sour point was just that I think the movie ends and then it carries on. Yeah. And the wider sense of the fact that, like, it's Batman again. But I like that a new generation are getting what is going to be known as the Gen Z version of a Batman. Like, it's going to be their solid one.
Do we know what we're getting in the next one?
We know for certain that there is a Penguin TV series that's going to be made.
With Colin Farrell?
With Colin Farrell.
Well,
and there was going to be a Gotham, police TV show, but that's been cancelled apparently,
right?
And in favour of maybe doing like more of an Arkham Asylum TV show, but there's nothing confirmed yet. But what I'd love to see is a movie there's a game actually called Arkham Asylum.
No, I know. I have a child.
Oh, great. Yeah. Great. But it's really good because it's essentially Batman. Think of like The Raid.
Yeah, no,
like
I've seen it. I've seen it. Yeah, yeah.
So it's Batman just making his way through Arkham Asylum, across all these. And I would like so be down for that in a movie. That would be so great.
My main memory of it originally was, are you old enough to be playing this? You know. And then the Alien game, are you old enough? You know, like, wow. But there is going to be another film?
Oh, without a doubt.
There is a trilogy coming.
Oh, there's definitely going to be, like, there's definitely going to be more films.
Okay, so do we think that we are going to see Barry Keoghan as Joker?
Without a doubt. And I also think I don't know whether or not we've met them in this movie, but I think we're going to do Robin.
Oh.
I think that potentially the kid of the mayor could be like the kid that he takes under his wing and sort of does the Robin situation with.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the last time in the Batman feature film universe that we had Robin was in Joel Schumacher's Batman and Robin.
Technically.
But?
But The Dark Knight Rises, there was a tip of Joseph Gordon-Levitt being called Robin, sort of facilitating the character of Robin, where like he was like, he was called John Blake, and at the end he goes to collect something and it's not written under his name, and he says, you should try my real name, and gives her ID, and she goes, I like that name, Robin. And it's just so silly.
But it's a gag because he's not Robin.
But he's facilitating the character of Robin, where he's going to be like the Batman successor and things like that. It's
but Robin isn't Batman's successor. Robin is Batman's ward.
he becomes...
No, he's not well. He is. It's like, I'm sorry, that's what he is.
And then we've had a dead Robin in the Zack Snyder universe that the Joker had killed, so it already happened off screen.
I don't remember anything about that.
There basically was a costume... that was in a glass casing that had spray paint on it that said, haha, joke's on you, Batman, of the Robin costume.
In which film?
Batman versus Superman, I believe.
Right, okay. Did
who cares?
Give a flying...
No, obviously not. Okay. And, lest we forget, one of the best Batman films ever made, Lego Batman.
Lego Batman's got a Robin in it.
Yeah, okay.
No, fine.
Where Michael Cera plays a great version of him.
All right, so, yeah, but I'm still...
Because I would like to see, in this version...
I just can't imagine Robin being any good.
Think about it the way that Hit Girl and Big Daddy works in Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
But like in this, because obviously that's what that's inspired by anyway, but think about like Robert Pattinson's Batman trying to do his best to teach a kid how to cope with his own trauma and doing it through
No, I'll be honest with you. I can't imagine a good Robin.
Interesting.
I really can't.
Well, maybe we'll have to come back in a few years.
There's a Batman comic strip in the 70s when Robin goes to college and Batman is on his own for the first time. And because I used to have that, everybody used to have it, that anthology of, you know, Batman from the 30s to the 70s, whatever it is. And there was a Superman one as well. But towards the end of that, there is a strip in which Robin leaves and Bruce walks around the manor and goes into Robin's bedroom, and you know, and it's kind of, there's a sort of heartbreaking thing that Robin's gone, and I just remember thinking, thank Christ for that.
Well, that's what I think would be potentially interesting, is that if they did Robin and it was like a, because I think there's a thing about Batman's character, this is why it almost feels like we're seeing the kind of same thing again, like even though this feels so different, this Batman, the Batman movie feels so different, we are kind of retreading similar Batman stories and seeing a development where he does become a father figure to somebody but isn't perfect at it and is definitely using the wrong, questionable techniques and teaching them how to crime fight. Seeing that development for Bruce Wayne and Batman, I think could be interesting. And if they find the right avenue, the right sort of lens for it. And I would say that Matt Reeves... You know, I kind of trust that he could potentially make that work. I think just generally seeing Robin on screen would be... to imagine it is weird because it is just a little kid in a green and orange costume or whatever it is.
During the comics campaign of the 1950s, one of the things that they took objection to specifically was the presence of Robin. Because there was this whole thing about, hang on, you're talking about a grown man and a young boy running around in a cave wearing your pants outside your trousers. That's clearly... homoerotic and nothing else.
There's been a lot of talk about that, yeah.
And it was, and so what's interesting about Robin is that the character of Robin has swung between being, on the one hand, just the ridiculous part of a story that no one cares about, to being the potentially most subversive part of a story that really, really got, you know, under the skin of people who was up on their, you know, moral high horse about how bad superheroes were. I think my problem with it is. In Batman's present incarnation, the sense of insularity is such that it's hard to imagine how you'd get to the father figure thing. And I know in the comics the whole thing is, it's the, I was saved and therefore I have to save somebody. It just, I don't know, I just can't imagine Robin working in the 21st century. But hey, I mean, I live to be corrected. If they could find a way of doing it, then fine.
I'm not in a disagreement with you at all. I can't see it, but I'm open to it working. And it would be, I can imagine it's risky for a studio as well, but it would be interesting to see how they would approach something like that. Because I think it's like a core part of the Batman mythology that just hasn't been properly acknowledged for a and also, long time.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't Robin the connection to the circus? Isn't
yes.
that you find? So yes. that so that kind of carnivalesque thing is the mm. is the thing that you get is you get through the character of Robin. Okay, so generally we've both seen it twice.
Yep.
Generally, we both think it's much better than we expected. Mm-hmm. But generally, we both think as a standalone, hooray! But let's see where we go from here.
Definitely, and I think that it can't escape things that have happened before it. And I'm into it, but I'm also a little bit sort of, I can't help but be like, yeah, it's Batman again. it is very good, and it is so brilliantly realised, but it is, at its core, another Batman.
Okay. Very last question.
Yes, sir.
What did you make of the flying scene?
It's a bit funny, and I can't believe that in all the realism that they've got, and I really loved the moment just before he took off where he looked scared of the height. I thought that was good to see Batman yeah. behave that way. And I liked the idea of sticking the camera on his head in a sort of GoPro kind of way. But then him hitting the bridge at the rate that he did and then just gets up and brushes himself off.
Well, he hobbles a little bit.
And then he carries
and
on.
And then he hobbles a little bit and he gets back and he is a bit bruised.
Yeah.
But he's not as bruised as somebody who literally...
He'd be impaled.
Yeah,
he'd be flat.
You are not walking away from that. I quite like the idea that, you know, because those suits are a real thing.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, there was quite a lot of new stuff about them, about like if you were ever trapped in a high building, could they be used as escape suits? Mm. So they are a real thing. But the whack that he's going at when he,
yeah,
it's like, yeah, no.
Like I could have done a crash landing in a less aggressive way and believed it a bit more, but it felt a bit like, I mean, he smashes into a bridge.
I know. He's just, and like you say, he goes,
Yeah. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah. But also the whole thing about, you know, yeah, the realism is that he's hurt. No, he's alive. Yeah. How is he alive? It's like every single part of his face would be behind him at this point.
One last question for you.
Okay.
Who's your Batman? When you think about Batman.
Well, I mean, look, on one level, my Batman will always be Adam West because that was my generation's Batman. And I know that, you know, it's the campy and silly version, but that was the Batman that I knew. Plus, I love the theme tune and, you know, I mean, no, but, you know, The Who did the theme tune and The Kinks did the theme tune and yep. The Jam did the theme tune. And actually, all that stuff was when I first got given, you know, my dad went away and he came back and he gave me and my brother, you know, the Batman anthology and the Superman anthology. And they were the two comic book anthologies that we had. And we read both of them, you know, cover to cover, absolutely loved it. And I kept it. And then later on, I read them to my kids. And that was you know, around the time when Adam West was on television. And it was, wow, the comic books are, you know, much more interesting. So probably Adam West.
Yeah.
And, you know, Adam West always said that thing about it wasn't camp. It was a pastiche. You go, well, that is kind of the same thing, but I mean, there's the thing when, you know, the time when they get into the Batmobile, and the Batmobile blows up, and then the smoke clears and they're both fine, and Robin says, you know, thank God we had on our anti-thermal bat vests or whatever it is. I mean, all that stuff was genuinely funny, and Cesar Romero was great.
Yeah.
So
Robert Pattinson even said, like, when he was a kid and watched that show, he didn't think it was silly. He was like, this is a serious television show. Well, like you're a kid, and there's nothing. Weird about that.
William Shatner will always be my Captain Kirk.
Right.
Even though it doesn't matter who else does him or whatever, he will always be that.
Although, yeah.
As I've always said, you know the Star Trek movie that's directed by William Shatner because it's the one that begins with him free climbing, you know, El Capitan, despite the fact that he looks like he did a Stannis stair lift. But it's like... Anyway, Jack, it's been a real pleasure. I will join you again for the last Kermode on Film, and we will just talk about whatever takes our fancy, but not Jared Leto.
No. My Batman is George Clooney, by the way.
Oh, I didn't ask you. I'm so sorry.
I'm joking. I just can't get over those bat nips. They're very memorable.
Although, weirdly enough, the nipples weren't invented for Clooney. The nipples...
They're on
Val Kilmer. Yeah, that's right. Kilmer was a tit as well.
Yeah. Like, when I was a kid, the Batman and Robin film was my favourite Batman movie when I was a kid. That was what I wanted to watch when I wanted to watch Batman.
You don't put me in the cooler.
Yeah. Jail.
Every single one of Arnold Schwarzenegger's lines, it's a cool it.
Yeah. It's all like
don't
that.
Don't put the freeze on you.
The Iceman cometh.
Oh, good Lord. Yes. Anyway, and on that bombshell, who is your Batman?
It's got to be Christian
Bale.
I mean, yeah, like it was George Clooney genuinely when I was a kid, and then what was defining for my cinematic tastes in general was those Nolan Batman movies.
Yeah, I think that's a cooler thing than Adam West, but
I don't know. Not anymore. People seem to be taking against the Dark Knight now the Batman's out. We're trying to end this podcast, but like, yeah, like there's a whole like campaign at the moment of like people being like, well, the Dark Knight is bad and has always been bad except for the Joker scenes, and we can say that now that the Batman exists. And I'm like, what are you all talking about? Why are we doing this black
and
white?
Is everyone saying that?
Well, it's just the internet, isn't it? It's internet discourse.
Yeah, you know that a lot of the internet is just not true. Don't you, Jack? You know, and look, I'm going to do something which you've probably never seen before. I'm going to look.
Oh my God.
I know.
And for listeners, Mark just closed his
laptop. I just closed my computer, and the best thing is we're still here.
Ah, wow. Yeah.
Okay. Right, you say goodbye. You hang up first.
Right. This is the
bye, Jack.
Penultimate episode.
Bye. No, you hang up first. Go on. No. Bye.
Right.
Bye.
I don't want to
still
go.
Still here.
I don't want to go.
Bye.